Interview number 102. Brother Wolf is interviewed by his audience on being a professional storyteller. Hi, this is Harvey Heilbrunn. I'm a storyteller musician from Long Island, New York, and a member of LISTEN, the Long Island Storytelling Network. My website is www.hdhstory.net. I've listened to every one of the Art of Storytelling podcasts, and all I can say is, Eric, you're an inspiration to us all. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you, my dear brother. What a beautiful soul.
All children love stories.
Folk tales, they are messages from our ancestors.
Then you have come to the right place.
We will have a storyteller in every school.
Storytelling can teach.
You have that openness of a child.
Good on you, Eric, for doing what you're doing.
That's a great question.
Thank you. I'm inspired just to be here. I'm really honored to be here.
We tell stories.
Know yourself.
Follow your passion.
And live with grace.
Hey there. Welcome to the Art of Storytelling with Brother Wolf. I'm professional storyteller Steve Otto, and today you listeners of the show will be interviewing the host, Eric Wolf. This is the show where we examine the diamond that is the art of storytelling. We hold it up to the light and see it shine, where we see the brilliance of all the facets of using the human mind as a palette to see images. This program just might be the most important thing you could be doing. If you're reading a book now or surfing the internet, you might want to set that aside, because what Eric has to offer you could be the most important activity that changes your life. I know storytelling did that for me, and there just might be something here that's meant just for you. And if you're distracted, you're going to miss it. If you're surfing the web, by the way, you might want to go to www.i-tell.net and check out my website. You can find more about what storytellers do for a living. If you don't remember the URL, just Google Stories by Steve. Now, let's hear a little more about Brother Wolf.
Hi, my name is Elise Kavanaugh. I'm founder of Free Spirit Nature Camp, which is now in its 21st year. I directed the camp for 12 years, and now its legacy is continued under the leadership of Kate Fox. I'm also a teacher. I teach English language learning to young children in kindergarten through second grade, and I'm honored to be the advisor to the elementary and middle school ecology clubs in Dobbs Ferry, New York. Well, this story goes way back to 1992, I believe, when I was searching for a storyteller for the camp that was in its third year. It was being held at Dayspring Community School, which was a Waldorf school in Warwick, New York. Someone gave me the name of a young man looking for a summer camp job. He was a storyteller, and the rest is history. I remember the first time I met Eric. We agreed to meet at the local library in my village. It was a lovely spring afternoon, and I was delighted to meet a remarkable young man with a long mane of bright red hair and a mustache. He was definitely a kindred spirit. We sat down on a bench overlooking the Hudson River, and we became acquainted. Eventually, I asked Eric to show me his stuff, that is, tell me a story. And he did, and I was enchanted. I believe that it was one of the stories from Joseph Bruchac's Keepers of the Earth. Maybe it was Gluskabi and the Wind Eagle, that later became an extremely popular story at camp. Well, to say the least, I was impressed. He used a variety of voices, and he had a very melodic voice, and that definitely captured my attention. I knew that he was the perfect match for Free Spirit Nature Camp. Over the years, I watched him develop as a talented storyteller and leader. He evolved in his technique and command of his audiences. He always maintained the avid attention of his audience with his call, ho, hey. He developed new activities at camp. He introduced living theater in his Mad Max productions, where environmental challenges were solved by a group of participating characters all decked out in role-playing attire. This was really popular at camp. And whenever Eric came back during summer visits, after he had moved to Ohio, the campers begged him to lead a Mad Max production. He also led the campers and created nature trails along the paths of the camp, where campers were transformed into animals, waiting along the fringes of the path, eager to greet visitors. I think that Eric's arrival at Free Spirit was a pivotal moment in his development as a storyteller. It combined his dedication to raising people's awareness about environmental challenges and his commitment to providing a memorable, free-spirited camp experience to young people. He accomplished both. He raised the awareness of our campers regarding the depletion of natural resources and the loss of habitat for many species of animals through his stories. Last summer, I saw Eric again at the 20th anniversary of Free Spirit Nature Camp. Eric again demonstrated his enchanting storytelling skills with a thought-provoking story that called everyone to action to protect the beautiful world that is our home. He has really come a long way. He held an audience of over 100 people spellbound, hanging on his every word. In fact, he actually outdid a very famous storyteller who had visited us earlier in the day, who entertained the group of people who came for the 20th anniversary. Bravo, Eric. Eric is now known as Brother Wolf and has become an expert techie, crafting his own websites and podcasts and holding storytelling retreats. I am really proud to have met Eric in the youthful beginning of a career as an environmental troubadour. Thank you, Eric.
There are things that we should not do as human beings. There are places that we should not go. Take this story as a warning to remember and give thanks for your simple mortal form, for the gift of your mortality, for the gift of your life. Seek not those things outside of mortal kin. Remember this story of the Ice Queen. There was a woman once who was so beautiful. Everyone said so. And she was vain in her heart. And her heart grew cold with all the lovers. Until one day she saw her grandmother. And looking in her grandmother's eyes, she saw the fate coming to meet her. And she knew that she must forestall it. She must fight it with every breath she had. And so, seeking to not lose this beauty, she stood herself by the fairy way, and she waited. Till on a new moon, the fairy queen came a-passing. The young woman, she just looked up, and she said, "Please." And the queen stopped. "What is it, dear mortal?"
"Please, your highness, I am growing old, and my face will soon bear wrinkles. All I wish is to be forever beautiful."
"Yes, it is a small thing," said the fairy queen. And she reached up and took from her ear, she took a blue sapphire earring, and she passed it to the young woman. Well, the young woman took that earring and she put it on her ear. And so began the reign of the Ice Queen. For 500 years, there was a pass in the mountains that always knew snow. Yes, there were a few short summer days when you could go up there and bring back the bodies. But always, there was the sign of snow where spring and summer should have ruled in all their glory. They told stories of her.
How she would sit in the pass with her long black hair and her ice comb. And she would comb her hair and lift up her glass and look into it. And her earring, oh, the blueness of it. It was like a star brought to earth. Her heart, they said, was long frozen. Everyone spoke of the danger, but sometimes fools would not listen. Merchants, in their eagerness to save 20 miles off the passage, would forget the stories of their grandparents or their great-grandparents, and they would try the pass over the mountain. And if they should meet her, they would not think that was the woman. This could not be the woman. She could not be that dangerous. And she would look at them, and she would say, "Am I not the most beautiful one?" And if they said, "Yes, yes, you are. You are like the stars above brought to earth," though their voice would shake, yes, she would let them live. But if they said anything else, if they said a true word, "Your eyes are like stone. Your face is like a statue's. You hold no beauty," she would take a deep breath and breathe out, and she would freeze every living being in that pass, stone and ice cold. Once she did this, and she heard a cry. "What is that noise?" she thought. "I haven't heard a noise like that in 500 years. She went and lifted up the blankets, and there in the wagon was a little baby. It was still alive. And when she saw that baby, she remembered what she had given up, the gift of motherhood, her own child. She remembered what really mattered. And so she picked up that baby, and her heart melted just a little bit. And she carried that baby back to her cave bear. And that bear raised the baby for her, because she was too cold to take care of a baby, and she knew that. And so it was that Snow came into the world. Snow was a good girl, because there was no other choice. Her skin was white, as was her hair from that night. She would walk the mountain pass with her mother, and her eyes would warn the travelers. But still, there was many things and much food for them to eat, and many different cloaks and capes and gifts and jewelry. For every time a man or woman would die from the Ice Queen's wrath, she would just take all their stuff, as her royal due. Until Snow began to come of age, she began to round out a little, as they say. And the Ice Queen began to think, as the responsibility as a parent, that she would provide a young man. And how else would she provide it but the way she provided everything else for her daughter? She would just kill off everyone else, except him. So doing that, she brought home a properly submissive, handsome, and kind black-haired stranger. The young man was kind to Snow and sweet, and quite by chance and by fate's desire, who knows why, Cupid's arrow, the two actually fell in love. And it was a true love, a love that only happens once in 100 years. They loved each other like the sun and the moon. It was good. It was good until he forgot himself. She was sitting there, the Ice Queen, looking in her glass. And he came by and she said, "Am I not the most beautiful one you've ever seen?" And unlike the other 35 times he answered properly, this time he said, "Oh, but Snow is so much more beautiful than you." We all make mistakes. She let him live for the night. That night, when the lovers were asleep, the Ice Queen crept into their room and she shook awake Snow. She said, "My daughter, I have changed my mind. You will have to live a spinster. Good night." And then the Ice Queen went to sleep. After 500 years, your imagination dulls.
It did not occur to her that Snow might have her own opinion on the matter. So when she was asleep, Snow woke her lover, crept into her mother's room, took the ice comb, took the glass, the looking glass, and very so carefully slipped the earring from its mooring on her ear. Snow had learned a few things from watching her mother. She knew the ways of witches. And so she was out of there so quick. She hopped on that cave bear with her lover, and they were going down the mountain as fast as they could go. But they weren't long gone when the Ice Queen awoke, and she knew what was wrong, and she was absolutely furious. How dare she? And any warmth in her heart was gone. She was after them with all her powers, all her fury, all her vileness. She ran down that mountain faster than a cave bear could travel. Snow heard her coming, a rumble, an avalanche, and she turned on the bear and she cried, "Mother, no, please, no, let us go, let us go." And she took the ice comb and she broke it and threw it down. And when she did, the trees there that were on the mountain, the trees, they cracked and splintered, and ice and water came out of the air, forming a wall of broken trees, 4 miles wide and half a mile deep. And then Snow kept going down the mountain. Well, the Ice Queen saw this coming up. She was running down. She was building an avalanche of snow behind her as she went. And the Ice Queen ran down, and she saw this wall of toothpicks to her, she thought. Toothpicks. Toothpicks they will be. And she breathed in and breathed out, and she made it even colder still until everything there shattered and became nothing but flakes of ice crystals. And she ran through this slurry down the mountain faster still. Well, Snow was going down, and she took the glass in her hand, and she was scared. Her lover was holding her tight, but she turned on the bear, and she said, "Mother, please, no. Please turn around. Please." And her mother just screamed out, "I will have my revenge." "Very well," said Snow. And she took the glass, she threw it down. And there appeared a deep and wide lake. It's still there today on that pass. It's still there today. Well, the Ice Queen paused this time. She feared the water, moving water. She would not be stopped. She took a deep breath. She breathed out across the ice, and the lake was frozen, not just on the surface. The lake was frozen all the way down. And then she crossed over. Snow saw that she was not going to make it. She was not going to make it off the mountain, off the pass, past the snow line. She knew it was too late, and she turned. And getting off the bear with her lover, she held up the earring. Blue like a star, it shined in her hand. And she began to cry, tears coming down her cheeks. "Mother, no, please, Mother, let us go. Mother, forgive us." But the Ice Queen was having none of it. Her rage was complete. The avalanche was coming. The storm was coming. The clouds were coming. And so, Snow held the blue star beneath her chin, and the tears streamed down and mixed with the fairy magic. And that diamond melted. The Ice Queen never knew what hit her. On that mountaintop, spring and summer had been held in check for 500 years. 500 springs, 500 summers, deep in the ground, waiting to happen, and they happened all at once. An explosion of life and sound, an explosion of green rolling out up the mountain towards her. The Ice Queen had time just to turn and scream, "No!" And the grass itself grabbed her ankles. The trees grew up around her. The vines gripped her. She felt herself changing in form. She felt herself becoming a flower. She cried out, "If this is my punishment, let you all know
that any babe who drinks of me will die. And she was gone. Snow lived a happy life after that. But to this day, if you have a cow, if you let the cow to feed, if you let the cow to wander, and if the cow should eat of the snake root, the white snake root plant, if the cow should drink or eat of the white snake root plant, then the milk of that cow will kill any babe who drinks it.
This is Fran Stallings. I'm the head of the Oracle Awards Committee for the National Storytelling Network, and I wanted to let you know that Eric Wolfe is going to be receiving the Distinguished National Service Award from NSN at the conference in Los Angeles the end of July. It's going to be a beautiful ceremony. He's going to get 3 whole minutes of national fame, and we hope some of you can come and be there. The conference is going to be several days of wonderful presentations by storytellers from all over the country, and I believe some from overseas as well. You can find more details about it on the National Storytelling Network's website, storynet.org. Take a look. It's going to be fun.
This is Michael DeMcCarty, chair of the National Storytelling Conference, which will be in Los Angeles at the Marriott in Woodland Hills, July 28th to August 1st. There will be workshops, storytelling concerts, fringe performances, story slam, master classes to help refine specific skills. There will be keynotes by Diane Farlot and Antonio Sacra, as well as a panel by storytellers with disabilities. Sunday afternoon, the conference will close with a concert featuring Susan Klein, Willie Claflin, Antonio Sacra, and Victoria Burnett. It's going to be great. Come on down. Check out storynet.org.
Hi, Eric. This is Jean Lester from Ohio, and I don't really have a question. I did in the beginning, but I don't now. I have just some comments. I've been listening to my iPod, and I've been hearing how the professional storytellers describe their jobs, and it's been very, very informational for me, and I'm gaining much, much useful information. I did have a question about how to start storytelling in the schools. And I had difficulty time presenting myself to certain schools. But Kevin Cordy, when I heard what he says, he gave a great description of how storytellers can work in schools. And next week, I will begin working at a school to help students learn how to tell stories. That's exactly what I want to do. The Zen of Storytelling was also helpful, and I'm going to quote from Brother Blue, what he says about telling stories. And he says, the stories, from the heart of me to the heart of you. And as I work with young students, that's what I want them to learn, how to put their stories in their hearts. And that's what my experience has been. I have found out it's so much easier when you do get those stories in your heart. And I'm so grateful for you, Eric, for having a program like you have, and I'm learning so much about it. And I really don't have a question, but I'm just so excited about things that I'm learning from your listening to all those great, wonderful storytellers. And I'm from Ohio, and that's my story.
Well, thank you, Jean, for calling in. I really appreciate it. I hope we actually met at NABS. I think we did. National Association of Black Storytellers. I'm really flattered that you have gained so much from this little project of mine. And I really, really appreciate the fact that you were one of the chosen few who put down money to buy an iPod with the full collection of the shows on it in the higher quality format. So you're not listening to that tin sound that most people are listening to right now. I just want to say that I can't do the show without support like yours, you know, to pay the electric bills and, you know, pay the gas company off and pay for the computer and all those expenses that happen. The iPod is an amazing resource. To have 100, which is right now, if someone bought an iPod, to have 100 interviews at your fingertips, There are many people who complain, I can't listen to the show, I don't want to be online for all that time, listen to the show. Well, here's a way of doing it. You know, you get your iPod completely freeloaded. If Gene Luster can do this, all you techie phobia people out there, believe me, you can do this too. And thanks for bringing up the email course. I really appreciate you mentioning that. It's a great resource. You can go to artofstorytellingshow.com/store, and you can see there is the current version of the iPod in all its glory. And I have stuffed as many of the shows on there as I possibly can. Believe me, I just stuff that thing full of knowledge and information, and it's accessible and easy to get. I don't know what else there's to tell you. You know, go out there and do it. By the way, if you're listening on an iPhone and you're going, okay, I heard about the iPod already, leave me alone, you can buy downloads of the show in a higher quality format. So if you're tired of hearing this tin noise, this tin's AM quality radio here, maybe you would consider purchasing a higher quality version. You could even future shows. Currently, show 106 is up. So if you don't want to wait 3 months to get the next show, you can just go to the download page on the website and purchase those shows that haven't been released yet. Let's go talk to my friend Buck P. Creasy in the great state of Kentucky.
Hello, this is Buck P. Creasy, Working America's Storyteller, and you can find me at www.buckpcreasy.com. And make sure you sign up for my newsletter. Hey, Eric, let me tell you something, buddy. I really appreciate your podcast. It's a great idea. I'm glad you're doing it. I love hearing all the different people talk about the different parts of storytelling, like Doug Elliott or any one of the other ones there. Of course, our own Mary Hamilton, we love her a lot. All them Norfolks and so forth. It's good to hear from them, and it's good to hear what they're thinking and doing. And you ask great questions, and you edit pretty good, too. I'm proud of that. So I just wanted to ask you my question. When you set up to do your blog and your podcast, exactly how much time did it take you to say, okay, I have something that I can publish that it's good enough for everyone to hear? And how long did it take you to decide when to begin broadcasting? Okay, that's my question. And I think that should be very close to a minute and a half.
That's the easiest question. I'm sorry to tell you this, Buck, but the answer is day one. Maybe spend a couple days really figuring out the brand, really figuring out what the idea is so that when you're releasing it, you know that at least. But besides that, I'd say don't hold back. This show has been an open process, and there have been a couple episodes, I won't say which ones, that I probably shouldn't have released. And currently I have one episode that I will never release. Actually, I have two episodes that I'll never release, and both of them are due to technical difficulties. It just doesn't make sense to try to listen to, you know, something that doesn't sound any good. You can't hear it. But for the most part, I followed the rule of the internet, which is that the faster you put your flag up, the faster it gets recognized. And once your flag is up, you do the best you can to improve the product you're offering. And so I have done that. I have done the best I can to improve my product. And the last show published is definitely 100% better than the first show published. Having said that, the first show published still has tremendous gifts to offer anyone listening on that topic. Let's take a station ID.
Hello, I'm Jim May, and you're listening to The Art of Storytelling with Brother Wolf.
On to the next question.
Hi, this is Heather Forrest. I'm calling from Huntington, New York, and I do have a website. It's storyarts.org with lots of information about storytelling. And my question is a wonderment at this point in the current renaissance of storytelling in America. Why is there such a fascination with defining storytelling? I'm often asked to define it in my own work, and I find it difficult because storytelling is both a noun and a verb. It's ancient and contemporary. And the word itself is so wide. It's an art. It's a tool. I think ultimately that defining it is quite limiting. It seems to be an evolving process. I'm just wondering why it's necessary to have a definition. Thanks so much for the show. Thanks so much for making it an opportunity for people to share ideas about storytelling.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? That was Heather Forrest, not a Heather Forrest, but like the Heather Forrest, who created storyarts.org, which is number 7 on storytelling websites in the world. Listen, friends, storytelling is a damaged brand. The word storytelling is used in every single communication industry that exists. When someone is successful, they describe them as a storyteller. But the oral narrative movement has been associated with children's librarians. Now, I'm not putting down children's librarians. I love children's librarians. They are my bread and butter. However, it's important to understand that when you take that image of a children's librarian reading a book, it doesn't really compare well to the many other ways and the many other mediums that storytelling is used. And so when people seek a definition for storytelling, they are seeking, I think, to repair this brand, to repair their mythic image of the word, and to correlate these two things that are out of synchronicity. You know, one is the image of the librarian reading a book, and the other is the reality of Shakespeare. Shakespeare was a fabulous storyteller. I can name any dozen of directors and movie actors who are just amazing storytellers. But in America, here in the 21st century, when I say the word storyteller or that I'm organizing a storytelling event, what most people's images that come to mind, what most people imagine, is someone sitting and reading a book. And that's all right. As long as we recognize as professional storytellers that sometimes in our initial marketing efforts that we need to abandon the word and use other descriptive elements. And once they're sitting in those seats and we show them what good storytelling is, whether it is out of a book or not, once we show them that it is something that appreciates and honors who they are, then it's really an opportunity for us to educate them as to the use and the wonder that is storytelling.
Hey Eric, this is storyteller Dale Jarvis from St. John's on the beautiful foggy island of Newfoundland, Canada. Great work on the podcast. I'm a huge fan of using new media to spread the love of oral storytelling, so keep it up. I'm hosting a big international symposium and conference on storytelling the last week of July 2010, here in Newfoundland. The theme for the conference is International Perspectives on the Art and Tradition of Storytelling. So my question for you is, when is storytelling an art, and when is it a tradition? And if there's a difference, how do you see storytelling evolving? I'm looking forward to more podcasts to come. And if anyone is looking for information on the 2010 Storytellers of Canada International Conference, you can look online at www.sc-cc.com, or you can look for me at dalejarvis.ca. Thanks, and hope to see you in Newfoundland.
Hey, Dale, I'm so glad you called. Thank you for calling in. Dear listener, if you can get there, you should go to the International Conference in Canada. It's an amazing conference. I'm sorry I won't be there. I'm going to be in L.A. at the National Storytelling Network Conference going on the exact same week. What were you guys thinking, huh? Both of you guys planning against each other like that. That's just not all right. If I could clone myself, I would, but I'm already committed to the NSN Conference. Dale didn't mention it, but he also has a pretty nifty podcast. If you look it up in the iTunes directory under Dale Jarvis, you'll find it right away. And it has a whole slew of cool live performances that he's collected of his over the years.
Hi, Eric. My name is Margaret Edinburgh. My storytelling name is Margaret Rose. I'm calling you from Atlanta, Georgia. My question is, how do I go about finding opportunities to tell stories for pay? And my comment is that I do have a website. It is www.rose-marge-creations.com. Thank you very much.
Hey, Rose. Thanks so much for calling. This is a big question. A lot of people are thinking about this, and some of them are solving it. I hesitate to say this, but the number one way that you, this is the biggest secret. This is the biggest and the most obvious secret of them all to being a well-paid storyteller. You ready? Here it is. Be really good. Be really, really, really good. Because when you're really good, when you get a gig, they invite you back. When you're really, really, really good, then doors open. Here's another secret of being a storyteller. So you got all your stuff together. You're really good. There are a lot of really good storytellers who aren't getting any work done because they're no good, and they're no good at admitting that they're no good at the business end of storytelling. So the second thing you do in order to find work and to build work is every day, you have a time for business. Every single day, a time for doing business, for finding business. You put that time aside and that's what you do. Nothing else. Now, I'm tempted to tell you, you go find someone to pay. You pay someone, basically, to be your business manager. You hire someone. You get five other storytellers together, and you say, I want to hire this business manager, and we'll each take turns paying them, and we'll pay them for 2 days a week, and their job will be to get us gigs, and we will pay them whether or not they get us gigs. So we'll let them learn the skills. This is actually a really good idea. I hadn't thought of it before now, but this is a really good idea in the storytelling community. Because overall, from what I've seen, and no disrespect to those who are really good at it, but overall, most storytellers are just terrible at the business aspects of storytelling. And so I want to get you out of those aspects as quickly as possible. And as a dyslexic person, one of the things I learned early in life is that you have to get out of the parts of the business you are terrible at, and you have to get into the parts of the business you're good at. You know what I'm saying? But in your case, I get the feeling that one, you're retired, so money's really not that big an issue. Two, that you love storytelling and you want to be respected for it by getting money. And three, the sort of gig that you would love, and I'm totally guessing here, the sort of gig that you would love would be a gig that's close by. You don't have to travel too far to do it. It would be a gig that you do year after year. And it would be a gig that with people who, you know, who you have a relationship with in some way. So to get those sort of gigs, you have to go out in the community and you have to be seen. You have to showcase your work. You have to work the streets. You know, that's what it comes down to. You got to work the streets. You got to put yourself out there. You got to do stuff. It's not going to happen. You know, what's the old expression? The phone doesn't ring by itself. Most people listening to this show right now who are professional storytellers, most of them have a bad relationship with their old clients. So I get the feeling that you're sort of a new client person. But an old client person, you have a lot of money that's under the table that you just have to reach down and pick up. So you have a lot of potential gigs that you just have to know when to call. So like a school, you need to know to call them, you know, in June, late August. A lot of people are set already by Lagos, but late August and January. And you're calling the old schools. You're calling all of your old clients and saying, hey, I'm available on these dates. I'm in your area. I'm thinking of coming to your area on these dates. What do you think? I'm going here and doing this. And by the way, so-and-so just hired me. And I just want to let you know, people love to know that you're invested in their success. And people love to know that you can really help them. It's a lot to chew on there, but I hope it helps.
Hello, Mr. Wolf. My name is Journey Sanders, and the website, which I'm currently building, called www.storytoday.net. And my question would be, how does one become a storyteller in a professional realm? And what companies should I be accessing in order to find a position or an in, if you will? I thank you very much for your time. Have a fantastic day.
Hi, Journey Sanders. I'm really glad you called. Thank you so much. This is a delicate question because the truth is that right now in this country, there are not as many storytellers making a living as there used to be a few years ago. And there are many very, very, very talented storytellers who are going out of the field. They're still available for gigs, but they have day jobs. And so the first piece of advice I would give you is not really what you asked me for, but the first piece of advice is keep your day job if you have one. The second piece of advice is that most storytellers work freelance, though there are some outfits that organize sort of, some aren't coming to mind right now, but there are a couple outfits that organize storytelling events sort of on a statewide level. And there are definitely arts councils that you can get storytelling gigs through if you go in and sort of perform with them and they approve you and you're doing really good. That's sort of the private practice model. But there is actually a model for someone who hasn't worked professionally before where you can sort of get your sea legs and get paid and work every weekend and make a little bit and, you know, you work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and you're a storyteller. And you do what you're good at, or you also do other stuff for other people. And that model is the Renaissance Fair circuit. And there are a number of storytellers who have specialized in that circuit and who make a good living in that circuit. As for how do you become a professional storyteller, I think when somebody pays you, you become a professional storyteller. My first paid gig was at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. And I was really trying hard to get gigs at that time. And I just happened to run into somebody in the park and they hired me. And just like that, I started getting paid. And from there, I did a lot of, you know, sort of institutional work. And that meeting was completely accidental. You know, I sent out all these flyers. I called all these people. I did all this stuff. And honestly, none of that work had anything to do with the fact with that first gig, which was a very well-paid gig for that era, for the 1990s. The point of what I'm trying to say is that the first step is belief and the second step is action. It's important, really, really, really important that as a performer, as a storyteller, that you have a business sense about what you're doing, especially if you're going to be financially dependent on it. And as I said at the beginning, keep your day job. Save up your sick days, save up your holidays, and use them for gigs. And that will give you a cushion that will make you less frantic and less worried and more hireable. Because nothing kills a potential gig more than when you need it. It is so much better to not need a gig and tell someone, I love you, I want to work with you, I love what you're doing here. And this is my price because this is what I'm worth. And here's someone else who's worth less. And they're not as good as me, but that's what you get when you pay less. And you can hire them if you want them. That's just an amazing negotiating position because you become the sought after commodity. And as I said earlier to another question, you have to be good. You really have to do the work. And I've never seen you perform, so I can't even speak about that. Anyway, thank you so much for calling.
Hi, Eric and fellow storytellers. My name is Rob McCabe, R-O-B-M-C-C-A-B-E. My website is www.rob, as in boy, M-C-C, A, B as in boy, E as in Edward, .com. I live in Dearborn, Michigan. I'm a Michigan-based storyteller. And I guess my major question right now is for you, Eric, and for other storytellers out there is, where can individuals go? Where can they go for grant money to support individual grant money, not institutional and not nonprofit, but individual-based grants for storytellers and performers. I know about Northlands, and I know about the National Storytelling Network, but I'm looking for big money and some ways that I can write for individual grants, similar to like the NEA, National Endowment for the Arts. I don't know if they still give individual grants, but I'm looking to get some money because it's really tough out there right now because a lot of schools don't have budgets to hire storytellers or have after-school programs, and I want to utilize this money to get out there and promote literacy through storytelling. So that's my question. Love your shows. Keep up the good work, and peace out. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for calling. Rob, by the way, is indicating what I talked about earlier, which is that it's really hard out there, so keep your day jobs. And for all you storytellers who are listening who are making a living right now, you know, give praise to the Almighty that you are so lucky. Rob is living in the one state in the country that's basically, you know, economic Armageddon. I've heard stories of Michigan of entire arts communities disappearing in 12 months because the economy went from bad to impossible. So hats off to Rob for existing as a storyteller in the great state of Michigan. I think he's going to have, I don't think it's going to get any easier. I was going to answer your question with the information you already gave me. So you've reached the edge of my knowledge. I could do some research for you online, but I honestly think you're just as qualified as I am to answer those questions. I just had a talk yesterday with a storyteller in New York who goes to the Foundation Center, and she spends days and days there. I think the mistake we make as storytellers is that we define ourselves in a way that's difficult for the grant institutions to give us money. And I think that there's nothing wrong with telling them your theater or telling them you're a performance artist, because that's a grant category they can understand. And as long as you make it about literacy, I've gotten so much more loose since the beginning of this project about the name, the word storytelling. And I just really encourage you to not keep that attachment of that word. Still be a storyteller, but don't be afraid to describe yourself to potential grant institutions as somebody who does children's theater or somebody, you know, children's monologues, children's theater. It's a terminology that's much easier for the grant-making institutions to understand, and they just get it, and they are more likely to give you money. Now, of course, you really should pick a terminology that they also associate you with success. So, you know, there's various ways, you know, I'm not going to go into that. But what I'm saying here is that it's about how we define ourselves, because that's what I know how to talk about, because I don't really know that much about grants. Because I'm, as you know, I'm dyslexic and I don't write grants, mostly because having written 30 of them and not getting any, I figured 30 to zero was a good place to stop. And I should go on to something that I'm good at. Anyway, I hope that's helpful, Rob. I don't think it really is. I'm sorry. Let's just pause here for a moment. Let's recognize something. It's important about the storytelling community. We need to talk about this honestly. Let's just a little heart-to-heart talk here. Because a minute ago, somebody was asking, how do I become a professional storyteller? Somebody else is asking, how do I get paid gigs? These are really good questions. But let's understand that many of the higher storytellers, quote-unquote higher, the professional, nationally recognized storytellers, they all have certain characteristics in common. Now, there are exceptions to this rule. In particular, I'm thinking of Bill Lepp is the exception to this rule. But many of them are married to people who are retired or are retired themselves. My friend Sid Lieberman comes to mind. He's a retired school teacher, so he has an income that is independent from his storytelling. This is really important because it creates a safety net that allows these people time to develop their art form, allows them to get good. It allows them to, if things don't work out, you know, gives them a fallback position. And when you're playing without that net, you know, you have a whole different sense of urgency. And many times it can become much harder to get those gigs that you need so desperately. So I just wanted to be honest about that because I care about you. You know, many of you don't know who you are, but I care. I want you to feel successful telling stories. And I really want you to understand that the highest level of the art of storytelling is not necessarily on the big stage. And I know, I can hear the big stage tells it, what? No, you know what I'm talking about. A few months ago, I was at a public gathering in my community in the Vale. And I think I told the story already, but I'm going to tell it again. A few months ago, I was at this public gathering, and this little girl who knew I told stories came over to me and said, tell me a story. And I can't say no to that. She was cute, you know. And I said, you know, I read this story yesterday in a book. It's an Arabian Nights story. And I'm remaking it into a Jack tale. And so I told that story. And for the first time in my life, the room gradually fell quiet. It started from next to me, and then it spread across the room. And at the end of that story, everybody in the room was looking at me. Now, honestly, that wasn't my intention, but that's just what happened. And to me, that was a mystical experience that has no comparison to getting up in front of 2,000 people and telling a story. Because there's something about winning them over when they weren't really going there to do that thing that just makes me feel like, yeah, you know, just, yeah. And so I challenge you to not hold your biggest dream as performing at the National Storytelling Festival. It's a worthy dream. Don't give it up. I'm not saying you should give it up. It's a wonderful thing to do. You should go do it. I haven't yet. Hopefully someday Susan will be so kind. But I challenge you to just be good. Just be really, really good. Heck, you know what? I challenge you to be great. Reach for that greatness in this moment, not in that dream. In this moment, how do you reach that greatest of levels? And only you know what that is. Only you know what that is. Only you can be that person, that storyteller. And I challenge you, because that is what will lead to your success more than anything else. Now, this isn't really helping Rob in Michigan. I'm sorry to laugh, Rob, but it's not funny. I mean, the reality is that there are artists all over the country right now who are dealing with car payments, electric bills, and utility bills, and they're just suffering, you know. No going out to eat, no movies, you know, a lot of things that some people are still able to take for granted, they can't take for granted. So let's, you know. On to the next question.
Hey, Eric, John Daly here. I'm in Hawaii. I became aware of this certain type of recording called binaural with some kind of Chinese knockoff of an iPod. It was kind of already kind of on there like a commercial, and it was very impressive. It was like three-dimensional sound, and it's a particular, it's not stereo, it's not surround sound, it's binaural. And there were some stories from Dickens and a couple of things, just clips, and it was fascinating. And I was wondering if you know people that are doing this, or how I could get in touch with people that are doing this, or if I could get some recordings like this online. So,
hi, John. I'm afraid I have no actual experience with this system of recording. After I heard your message, I went on Google and I looked it up. And it was pretty easy to find. There was a number of articles online, and it was very interesting. Thank you so much for the heads up. If I had the extra $10,000, I might invest in the equipment, you know. Basically, the idea here, as you said, is it's three-dimensional sound. Your ears hear a certain way. And when we listen to radio or TV or any other of these industrial noises, there's a flatness to the sound that we get used to. And when you hear this other type of recording, it's quite amazing. And basically what they do is the recording equipment is set up, they set up the mics in the same place in the head, and they actually, in some cases, will put an artificial head there so that the sound has the same reaction on the head as if it was on your head. And it's a great way to listen in ear pods. When you have the ear pod in your head, it's like the sound is coming from that place to your original ears. Like your ears are in that spot. It's very different sound. I've never actually heard it, of course, but I know it's a very different sound. And it really works well with earbuds. And if I had the extra, maybe $5,000, I don't know, I would invest in the equipment. But, you know, there's only so many things you can get done in a day. Anyway, John, I hope that answers your question. And I was fascinated by it, and I'm glad you brought it up.
Hi, I am Mary Kay Croft. You hear my music at the beginning and the end of this show, and I am absolutely thrilled to be out there in the universe with the sounds. My version of storytelling is, as you may know from the song, more something that is written down first and then performed orally. My discussion is about the open mic as an aspect of storytelling, and not necessarily in a storytelling venue, but in songwriter open mics and poetry open mics. These are people telling their stories. I'm writing a paper for a presentation at a major national conference later on this spring, and I would love to hear things back. You can contact me through my website, which is Mary Kay Music, MaryKMusic.com. Please tell me your story of getting up there with your poetry and your songs and telling it. Thank you.
All right, Mary Kay, I love it. You hear that? Mary Kay was not asking me to tell her my story. She was asking you, the listener, to call her. And by the way, Mary Kay is really, really cool. I guess I say that about everybody, but she is. I really believe in the power of the open mic, and I believe in the power of listening to someone's story. And I really believe that as storytellers, one of the most radical acts we can do is listen, really listen to someone else tell their story. In a world where no one listens, this can be an amazing act. Right now, of course, the people in the country who are doing the most amazing stuff with open mics is The Moth. And The Moth has open mics twice a month, I think, in New York, L.A., and Chicago. And sometimes some of those open mics end up on NPR during their hour-long special. So it's an amazing opportunity for anyone listening who, if you think you have the goods, if you think you're good enough, if you're worthy of those gigs, then go on the show and be really good and tell that absolutely true story.
Hi, Erica. It's Noel Lewis Watts. That's Lewis hyphen Watts. And I'm calling you from Nanaimo, British Columbia, which is on Vancouver Island. I would love to tap into your show, but our long-distance telephone plan doesn't allow for that long time sort of thing or duration on the phone. But I got your last email, the Art of Storytelling show, and just enjoyed the stories tremendously. The website we have, it's temporary, but it's www.aroundtownteller, and it's all one word, .com. You can get a little idea of what we're up to and so on. Also, I sent you by email a story that my wife wrote about a woman that lived in this town many, many years ago. And it's a true story, mostly true anyway. There's a little embellishment here and there, but by and large, it's a true story. I thought you might enjoy and make use of it however you like. So I'll talk to you again sometime and keep listening to you for sure. Thanks very much, and bye for now.
Thank you, Noel. Appreciate the listen. I wasn't able to insert that story into this show because the show is way too long already, and the story was pretty long, I think 12 minutes. But I have inserted the story into my other podcast, Fairy Tales Forever. And if you want to go over there and take a listen, you can listen to Noel's wife's story. It's amazing. It's very nice. A great example of historical storytelling. If you want to hear another story, go right over there. FairyTalesForever.com is a link, and you go there and you click. You'll need iTunes to listen, or you can search for it in the iTunes directory, FairyTalesForever.com, and you'll find it, and there you go.
Hello, Eric. My name is Captain Bob Miller, and I'm out here in Weymouth, Massachusetts, located in the South Shore. I'm in New England on the East Coast. Great area for storytelling. Stories about the Pilgrims, and a lot of historical stories that deal with the Revolution, the Civil War, and the New England culture. I have a question. How about doing some stories based upon the Bible? There are excellent stories that are connected to the Bible stories known as a Midrash. Jewish folklore storytellers have told stories in relation to a Bible story. Perhaps sometime I could come on your show and do a telephone story of one of those stories called The Jewish Tailor. I know you'd love to hear that. And I know your audience would love to hear that and to hear some stories from this culture, the Jewish culture. Not just Bible stories, but stories from Russia, stories that come out of Poland, and many other areas in which the Jewish people had lived in Europe and also in many parts of the United States. One of the famous storytellers is Shalom Aleichem, who lived in Russia. His stories are wonderful and humorous. I also would like to dedicate this phone call to Lanes. This is the League of New England Storytellers. I know the folks here in New England would love to hear they get that promotion. They do nice work. Also say hello to Karen Chase, who runs Story Cafe down in New Bedford, Massachusetts. Thank you.
Hey, Bob. Thanks so much for your comment. I'm planning at one point in the future at having a show on this topic, on a number of topics around biblical storytelling, Christian spiritualism. I'm really interested in a number of applications of storytelling and religion. It's really interesting to me, and I'm fascinated with it. In particular, I've been thinking about a couple very famous Jewish storytellers here in the States. So this will get covered. Hey, Bob, thanks so much for your offer. It was very kind of you.
This is Lauren Eamy, standing on the streets of Jonesboro, Tennessee, and saying, the art of storytelling with Brother Wolf is where it's at. Oh!
Hello, Eric. This is Jenny Cargill-Strong calling from Byron Bay, Australia. And congratulations, Eric, on getting all the way to 100 episodes and keeping your quality so high. I recommend your site and your interviews to all my students, and I think of it as a little mini-university for storytellers available any time of the day or night from your own home. My question is, my stories are on itales.com, and I was wondering what the... How things are going in iTales as to compare to iTunes, and if you think what the rate is that people are accessing storytelling through iTunes, and those sort of avenues. My website is at www.storytree.com.au. Have a great one, Eric. Congratulations again. Bye.
Jenny! Jenny went to the Talk Story Festival in Hawaii, and we hung out with a whole bunch of other people. And it was pretty fun and wild to meet the Australian contingent. And I interviewed both of them. And if you go back, you can listen to that interview. It kind of went unexpected places. So Jenny's really amazing. And one of the most amazing things about her is that she has a very successful practice at selling storytelling CDs. And the year before last, she made $6,000 just off CD sales alone. And these are two people who, most of whom have not seen her perform, which is an amazing income stream, and I really have to get her back just to talk about that. But, Jenny, I don't know that much about iTales. Some people have made the mistake thinking that I'm directly connected because they were one of my sponsors of the show, but they were a sponsor of the show. They sponsored some events, and that was wonderful, and we worked together, and Mary Margaret is pretty amazing in what she does, but I actually don't really know the numbers. I know that iTunes has a huge audience and iTales has a very small one. And I know that in iTunes, it can be difficult for storytellers to be found in that huge audience. And I know in iTales, in that small audience, it's very easy to be found. So that's what I know. I also know a number of storytellers who are very successful at combining iTunes sales with their performances. My friend Bubba in LA, we had a whole conversation about this already, where he's actually performing at certain schools in LA. He'll mention that he has stories for sale in the iTunes directory, and he will have students purchasing his stories while he's on stage performing, using their iPhones, of course. But all of this really requires that your audience has the technology, and they're always, you know, I think that the potential is there right now. The Wild West is in the applications on the iPhone. That's where the Wild West is. And there's a number of people who are sort of running rodeos there, as continue the analogy. And I'm not one of them yet, maybe someday. But right now, the iPhone applications is sort of where things are happening. And I've been contacted by a number of people who they're not sponsors, so I don't really know them, so I'm not really interested in pushing their thing. But you can look up through Google storytelling iPhone applications and see what happens. I actually haven't done that search, so I don't know. Anyway, great to hear from you, Jenny. I really appreciate all of my Australian listeners and New Zealand listeners and Indonesian listeners and Chinese, you know, all the you folks on the other side of the world where the sun shines in the strange part of the day. I really appreciate you all, and I really thank you for listening. In particular, Jenny, thank you for being a big fan and being such a good sport with our interview. That was a great show. By the way, Jenny has an amazing story in the interview, and you all should listen to it.
Yes, indeed. This is Baba Jamal Karam, and you're listening to The Art of Storytelling with Brother Wolf, the only storytelling place on the internet where you can hear the true facts, the true feeling about storytelling.
Hello, I am Mihaela Blaga from Romania. First, I want to thank you for your podcast, for your course, and also for the books that you recommended. I am so grateful that I discovered all this. They really helped me in my work with children in my library. My question for you is, how can I become a professional storyteller in a country where there are no professional storytellers and where we have no storytelling festivals? Thank you.
I'm really glad you called. It's really exciting when somebody from as far away as I can imagine as Romania calls into the show. This is a good question. I've already discussed it at some length here, but your particular angle is a little different, I think, than some of the other angles on how to become a professional storyteller. In your case, I might suggest that you begin by telling stories every single week in your library, and that you make that a regular practice, weekly or daily, so that your skill base, your skill level is constantly building. The second thing I would do is I would create your own storytelling festival. If there's no festival in Romania, I would call it the Romanian National Storytelling Festival, and I would try to get government support and grants, if you can. I'm really sure there are other people in Romania who are telling stories. Probably not for pay, but there are people telling Romanian stories, there could be children's authors or children's musicians who also tell stories. So there's a whole slew of people you could be pulling from to create this festival. And because you're based at a library, you have that beginning structure, that basic group of people who will follow you into that festival and will take part. And you can seek out local partners, you know, find a theater locally who's struggling to get by and talk to them about this idea of using the festival as a means to create a mailing list or just as a way to bring people into their theater and to see the possibilities of coming back throughout the year. The key idea here is you need to find partners and you need to sell them on the idea that storytelling is really a low-budget art form. It does not require a lot of technical equipment, special instruments, or anything else really to pull off a storytelling event. All it requires is a great deal of passion and a few good artists. I put that last bit in quotes because I've seen enough not so good storytelling to know that getting those seats filled and then not having a good show is just not acceptable. So you need to be good enough. And if you're not performing, if you're going to be the enabler, if you're going to be the one who's creating, who's building this fire in your country for storytelling, why not have a sense of what is good so that you can pick out people, you can make people into the artists you need. You can find those people that you need to create that national Romanian storytelling community. I hope that helps. Good luck. I'd like you to write up a little report in a year and tell me how it's going, and I'd be glad to publish it on my show. So that goes for all of you, by the way. If there's anybody listening who has some amazing, cool things happening and you just want to tell and share about it, you know, I get thousands of readers a month on my blog, and I would be glad to publish an article by you or by anyone else about storytelling. I won't publish completely self-marketing pieces, but I will publish informative articles that at the end contain an offer to sell something or buy something, which comes to my offer here in the show. This episode is being broadcast at 128 bit rate. So the 128 bit rate is a higher quality. And you will have noticed as you're listening to the show is a much higher quality of sound. Do you like this sound? Well, it's more expensive. It's more expensive to send you. And I also lose money in the fact that people don't buy the episode from me. And so if you like this quality of sound, if you want to keep hearing this quality of sound, I would like to suggest that you go to the International Storytelling School and you sign up as an audience member for $10 a month, because that $10 a month will pay for that better quality sound. And the sound you're getting today is because of people who have signed up to be audience members. And they're donating their $10 a month so that I can cover these basic costs to get the show out to you so that you can hear it in this nicer quality. Now I get to ask, what is your final words? What are the final messages you want to end this show with, my dear guest, Brother Wolf? And I would say, I think the theme that's arisen out of this show is that nothing happens until you act. This is sort of an old story from business classes or business action classes, that many times in business, people get caught up in designing the business and creating the business plan and dreaming the business and doing this and doing that. And that's really wonderful, but it isn't an action. And in the end, the telephone is sitting there and you have to pick it up and you have to call and make connections and you have to call and you have to offer yourself to the world, because even the best storyteller on the planet without the opportunity to perform is not going to be noticed. Storytelling has such value and so many gifts. I have been blessed with the ability to see and appreciate storytellers all over the world. And in my community, I know of several really great storytellers who will never get up in front of an audience. But they certainly are good enough. They certainly have that spark. They certainly have that ability. When they tell a story, I'm just drawn right into what they're doing. Because there's a passion and there's a fire there. And that fire can light the world. Can light the world. But I just want you to know that the work you do is the most important work that you could be doing. Because storytelling is something that requires an individual approach. It requires a gift. And it may be a gift we all have. But in the end, only the actors count. You have the guts to stand in front of an audience of 100 people, 200 people, 1,000 people, 2,000 people. Doesn't matter. You have the guts to get up there on that stage. And that is a rare thing. That is an action worth doing. Because there is an unsettledness to the world. There is an unsettledness, a danger, a nervous tick, a fear in the world. And we have that solution. We have that ability to calm the fear, to soothe the wound, to give back the gift that was given us, and to pass it on to the next generation. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. This is Brother Wolf, a.k.a. Eric Wolf, in Yellow Springs, Ohio. This guest has written a post for the blog that can be read at www.artofstorytellingshow.com. This post includes a bio and a link to the guest's website, plus other additional information about our discussion. If you want to respond to this show, you can find this post and share your thoughts through the comment system in the blog comment box. If you wish to join a future show as an audience member, go to www.artofstorytellingshow.com/alerts and sign up to the email alert system. You can buy CDs of shows and preloaded iPods on the website. The music was created by Mary Kay Croft, and we are much indebted to her contribution. This show is produced and hosted by me, Brother Wolf, and I am responsible for its content. It is released under a Creative Commons non-derivative and non-commercial license. That means you can copy it and you can give it away, but you can't splice it up or sell it. High-definition versions of this show are considered copyrighted, all rights reserved.